My friends, I'm opening the first 50 spots for something new I've built, the Mental Fitness Blueprint. It's not content, it's not a course, it's a personalized operating system for your mind, built from everything I've learned through thousands of conversations, interviews, and years of practice. If you feel like this is for you, follow that curiosity, and details are in the show notes or at mchampagne.com. Who are you?
Yeah, I would say I typically tell people I'm a structure creator. So I'm obsessed with structure. I love understanding people. I love understanding people's motivations, their pain points, their challenges, and helping them create structure around the things that they're passionate about and using that structure to kind of overcome the things that are challenging for them. I'm also a health and fitness geek, so you know, I love being in this space and I love providing structure to this space. And I'm also a dad. So, I mean, those are kind of three ways I would describe myself that very much connect to how I spend my time. I spend my time, you know, creating structure with people. I spend my time doing health and fitness stuff. And I spend a lot of time with my daughter.
I love it. Did you grow up with a lot of structure? Like where did that structure enter into your world?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure. This is just something that I've always been interested in. I mean, I grew up in a household with two very high-achieving parents, a lot of focus on achievement, accomplishments. I was also lucky in that both of my parents, you know, the things that they did in their career were very much tied to their passion and purpose. So my mom is in nutrition policy and education. She's been in that space for over 50 years and I've done a lot of work around, she lives in Philadelphia, so helping the Philadelphia school system provide healthier meals for students and getting healthier food in corner stores. And so, you know, I'm working with food debt. So she's very passionate about that space. My dad, who passed when I was in high school, was a legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union and was very passionate about fighting for people's rights. And so kind of watching them and seeing how they thought about kind of building their careers and their lives, there was a lot of intention and maybe structure in that. And so I picked up potentially on that. But yeah, this is something I've always just been interested in and being regimented, putting things into buckets, simplifying complex ideas. It's kind of what I enjoy doing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm biased because I definitely agree with everything you just said. And I find that at least for me, everyone's a bit different, but I mean, I guess we're probably both biased towards the structure, but I mean, that's where, like between structure, and this is probably all linked together, structure, simplicity, and consistency, like you can move a lot of mountains with that versus being kind of scattered and all over the place. And that's kind of like in my work, I see most minds are the opposite of structure right now. I mean, they're scattered and they're at capacity, they're overwhelmed, they're stressed and so forth. And that doesn't lead to, first of all, I think we deserve to feel better than that as humans more days than not. But it also doesn't lead to really, you know, great work and, you know, a great parent, a great partner, friend and so forth. Right. And like, so that's my mission with this kind of work is how do we specifically in this case, bring in mental fitness practices and real simple tools to just allow the mind to breathe a little bit and actually be able to operate and thrive in the current landscape. So it's I'm excited. I'm excited you're here. I'm also excited just to give some context for the listeners. We're going to do something a little bit different. We'll spend a little bit more time on your background, David, in a minute, just so to give context. But David has graciously offered to do a bit of a case study review, kind of live on the show. On something that's really personal to me. I mean, and everyone here, there's some listeners that literally have been here for 8 years and sending big high fives to all of you. And there's also a tremendous amount of new listeners based on what I can see in the data. So welcome as well. The big thing I want to do though is actually launch the show on YouTube. And some may say, well, yeah, but I see it behind the human handle on YouTube. And you're right, but it's amateur hour is what I would say. It publishes weekly and it's an audio form with, you know, an automated tile or a graphic from the hosting platform. And that's not, it's a bit embarrassing, to be completely honest with you. So I want to do it properly and I want to have fun doing it. And David, you're probably the perfect person to be having a chat with this, and please do fill in the gaps. But you spent over 7 years at YouTube working on and with and leading teams specifically when it comes to monetization and content flows and all that kind of stuff. So how did you, I guess let's, before we get into things, let's bridge the gap a bit. We know a little bit about your parents. How did that lead into your fascination into tech?
Yeah, I'll give you a brief journey of my career. So yeah, I mean, I grew up on the East Coast, went to school there. As an undergrad, I was a philosophy major, but I had a minor in consumer psychology. And so again, that's really where I kind of started learning about marketing and kind of all of the things that feed into, you know, how to create messages that connect with people and understand people's pain points and motivations. And so, yeah, I worked at a couple of different companies before getting to YouTube. And I mean, for me, YouTube specifically, like, I remember early days of YouTube. I remember being in college in 2007, yeah. And YouTube was 2 years old at that point. And it was already like, these are creators and shows. So the first show on YouTube, or the first creator that I kind of watched pretty consistently, and maybe you'll appreciate this because they were Canadian, was Epic Mealtime. And that was first channel that I remember. They were uploading kind of weekly episodes. And I was like, oh, this is something I come back to and I watch every week. And so, you know, and those were early, early days of YouTube. And fast forward to 2018 when I started there. You know, YouTube is very much going for world domination. They're taking over TV screens. They're taking over podcasts. And so for me, that's the place that I wanted to be and wanted to build on and do marketing for, because that's where I knew I was going to make the most impact. I mean, YouTube's mission is to give everyone a voice and show them the world. And, you know, a lot of the philosophy behind the platform was removing the gatekeepers. If you have, you know, a podcast as you do, if you have a great idea, you don't need to pitch yourself to a Hollywood executive or someone with money. You can, if you have an idea and you have conviction in it, you create it and you put it up on the platform and you see who you can connect with, and you build community and you have control to build, you know, to put the messages out there and to build the community that you want to. So that was, yeah, I grew up as YouTube grew up. And it's funny now when I talk to people that I work with or other creators that, you know, that are younger than me and, you know, more the Gen Z digital native group folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, these kids are building businesses and they're in fourth and fifth grade. And so it's really cool now to see where things have come. And yeah, I very much grew up with YouTube and it was a place that I wanted to work.
Yeah. Well, and what I like about your story too, when we first met, I mean, you're no longer there, and that you can provide any details you'd like, in the sense of, I know there was a lot on your plate and kind of a very, I don't want to say typical story, but I mean, unfortunately, a bit of a typical story when there's just a lot of stress and easy to go down the burnout route. But with that said, you still, and you can feel it in your words, and especially in our first conversation, like, you still very much value the platform. It's not like you left in this with like a hate for the company in some capacity, right? Which often there's like that also follows when people leave and do their own thing. So why don't you provide a little detail there?
Yeah, I'm very grateful for my time at YouTube. So yes, I was there for about 7 years. I was on a product marketing team. I had a team of product marketers. We built many of the monetization products on the platform. Okay. And so there's really been a focus over the last 5, 6, 7 years of helping creators diversify their revenue streams, because to be a creator is to be a small business, and to be sustainable, you want multiple streams of revenue. And yeah, for me, so my daughter is 2.5. I came back from paternity leave in May of 2024. And at that point, within a month, I was given more people to manage. I was given many more product areas to manage. And you know, being a new parent is a whirlwind.
And I'd say
the biggest life change that I have ever experienced, I think most people would agree, is you're ever going to experience, is having a child. And so having a 6-month-old and then, you know, essentially, as I tell people, it's kind of like I had 10 times more work and half the time to do it. And that's not really an equation that works for most people. It certainly didn't work for me.
Yeah. And you prioritize and you grew up with health and well-being as a core pillar to your being, right? So
And so, yeah, just to be transparent, the last 6 months I was at YouTube, I went into a major depressive episode. Mental health is something that I've struggled with for parts of my life before this. Yeah. And recognized that for me to be able to show up for my daughter, to show up as a partner, I needed to make a change. And so I actually took a mental health leave from YouTube at the end of 2024 with every intention of going back. I love so many of the people I work with. I love so many of the products and projects that I worked on. And then life happens and I ended up, you know, I'm a health and fitness geek, so I've been wanting to move into this space, and then life happens and I ended up starting my own company. So there's a story around that, but that's
we got to know that. What's that story? What were the questions, I guess, on your mind during that time that allowed you to get real clear on, I'm not going to go back. I'm going to go do this thing.
Yeah. So there was actually two instances. So when I left for mental health leave, you know, I had a very transparent conversation with my manager, and I was like, look, I'm experiencing depression. I have had a ton of change in my life. I need a beat to figure out kind of to reset my nervous system. And I love YouTube and I want to come back. And my ask was basically not at that point, not to be a people manager. I wanted to come back as an individual contributor. And with the hope that that would be kind of the right balance of being a new parent and being an IC at YouTube. And then two things happened on leave. So one, I have a very good friend who was at Amazon for many years. He was laid off in 2024, he was laid off. And he was like, I'm just going to go travel the world and figure out what's next. And so fast forward to February 2025, I'm on leave and we have a catch-up chat. And I was like, hey, Jesse, you know, when are you going back? Like, you know, you've been off for a year. When are you going back to work? What are you thinking about for your next steps? He said, oh, I'm not going back. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, this is just, I've had having so much fun, and like life is kind of so much bigger than just being kind of in the typical 9-to-5. And that was kind of the first kind of seed for me of like, maybe there's something else out there and maybe I don't need to kind of go back to this very traditional path.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, I went to the Connected Health and Fitness event or conference in Los Angeles. And that was the first time that I had been to one of these industry conferences. And a couple of things happened there. I mean, I realized these are my people. These are the health and fitness people. This is the space I want to be in. I had a very meaningful conversation with actually someone, Mark, I think you'd really appreciate. His name's Newton Chang. He used to be the director of health and performance at Google for many years. Mm. And he's also has his own mental health journey and he has left the company since and talks a lot about the importance of mental health. But he and I had a very meaningful conversation while we were there. And we were talking about a lot of things. And, you know, to sum it up, he basically said, look, like, when certain things have changed in your life, you're changed and you can never go back to the way things were. And that was kind of additional confirmation that like, okay, I've been a YouTuber for 7 years. I'm a parent now. I've had certain experiences. I can't just go back and expect things to be the same. And then the last thing, Mark, that happened was, as I was talking to everyone in this space, everyone kept asking me, how do you do YouTube? How do you make money on the platform? How does it work? And I thought, well, I can do this and I can help people understand in the health and fitness space how to build businesses on YouTube and how to use YouTube more effectively. And then that was the idea for the company. And so that was February of 2025. And basically 2 weeks later, I filed for LLC, you know, between, so there was a 4 week period mark between Connected Health and Fitness and the Health and Fitness Association event in mid-March. So within that 4 week period, I had this idea. I filed for LLC and I had my first paying client by the time we rolled that into HFA 4 weeks later.
Wow. And here we are, essentially happy 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, we're right at about the 1 year anniversary of leaving YouTube and start a new journey.
And it seems like you, I mean, from at least what you've shared, I mean, from the clients and the people you're working with, I mean, it just seems like a perfect opportunity for you. It's like you're the best of all your worlds have combined.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like, you know, this term ikigai, where I have kind of my passion, the thing I'm good at, the thing the world needs, and the thing I can make money around all emerging. And yeah, I tell everyone this is a business and also it's passion and purpose. I want to amplify quality voices and quality people in the health and fitness space because health is hard. Most people in this country are not healthy, and there's a lot of low quality information on health and wellness online.
Yeah, I love it. Well, again, like I said, I just feel really blessed that, I mean, we connected in with mutual friends in the podcasting world, and it's just the timing, it was just really impeccable. So I hope, of course, you know, thank you for helping on this side directly, but then I just hope this conversation in general, most of the people listening here are interested and passionate about health and well-being and their minds and their bodies, their souls, like the whole nine yards, and they're all walks of life and doing really interesting things. So, you know, make sure for those listening, make sure to check out all of David's work and you'll get a taste of it really soon. So with that said, I mean, maybe I've got a few questions here that, I mean, they can be specific to the show, but just like high level general stuff that just, I think maybe to get people excited, because you were getting me excited in our first call. And I think just to kind of set the tone, because sometimes maybe I'll speak for myself for all of this. I look at YouTube and I'm like, where do I start? You know, and I mean, I'm a consumer, I'm a customer of YouTube. I you know, I feel like I'm like, oh, if I spend enough time, I can probably reverse engineer these channels that I really like, but it still just feels like so much. So I guess, like, what are some of the misconceptions that you have seen over the, you know, over the years and maybe most recent about YouTube, and like what it actually takes to, with, you know, with some time and some intentionality and some good strategy and systems and so forth, like what does it take to actually, you know, create a business on YouTube?
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for the fundamentals. Mm. And so I think anyone that wants to start a channel, a podcast, build a business on YouTube, you have to have a strong foundation and strong fundamentals. So from my perspective, that's being very clear on what your value proposition is. So what makes you unique, special, and different? Kind of what is the story, the idea, the experience that you want to share, that you can share, that no one else is able to?
Yeah.
So that's the first piece. And then the second piece is understanding who your target audience is. At Google, we had this great marketing mantra: know the user, know the magic, connect the two. This is literally how I think people should approach YouTube: is know the user. So know who your target audience is, know kind of what their, again, the consumer psychology piece, their pain points, their motivations, things they're interested in. Know the magic, know what your, you know, special sauce is, and you connect the two with content. So I think that should always be the starting point whenever I work with people. And, you know, and we can go through some of this exercise. I do a content market fit exercise, which is essentially that. It's outlining your value proposition. What does competitive space look like? What are some of the trends on the platform at a high level? Then moving more into a kind of strategic phase of, let's look at audience segments. So segmentation, breaking down different groups of people, demographically, psychographically, behaviorally, and then understanding out of those different segments. So if you have 3 or 4 or 5 segments, who is the target audience that if they see your thumbnail on YouTube, if they see your video, they are going to click on your content and connect with you more so than other things that they are seeing on YouTube. And so it is about, you know, YouTube, we'll talk about this. It's about niching down. The platform is so competitive. There's so much noise. There's so much content. It's not about trying to appeal to as many people. It's about identifying the target audience and the thing that you can deliver for that audience that no one else can. So that is what I would recommend as the starting point for creating a channel or creating content on YouTube. And then there is some kind of more executional pieces around, you know, YouTube, I would say, kind of comes down to two main things. It is about packaging. And so, you know, YouTube really wants to know when they put a video in front of you, are you going to click on it? So title and thumbnail are incredibly important. People think of YouTube as a video platform, and of course it is, but it is fundamentally different than a feed-based platform like TikTok or Instagram, where people are scrolling in a vertical feed. Because on YouTube, you have to intentionally choose a video, click on it, to then go to a watch page. So the packaging of that video is your entry point. And if you don't think about your entry point and your packaging, none of the other stuff matters.
Yeah.
And so that's the first piece. Click-through rate, packaging, title, thumbnail, very important.
So what does that mean, though? Like, this is what I mean. Is that just, when you say packaging, let's just say even the thumbnail, is that just mean visually attractive or like a quick one-liner or I think two or three words in there that immediately, you know, summarize what you're going to get out of the video? Like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah. So there's a couple of best practices and frameworks we could go over. I would say the first thing is, are you creating a curiosity gap? Are you creating intrigue with your title and thumbnail? And so if you have a podcast episode, if we have this episode right now on YouTube.
Yeah.
And
what's the title?
If someone's going to see, you have creative real estate, which is small creative real estate. So I always tell people less is more in a thumbnail. You don't want to clutter it. You want just no more than, I would say, two or three focal points. But how are you using that creative real estate effectively? And then your title is always running in connection with the thumbnail. So that is where you put your words, and you have those two components. How are you using them collaboratively, and how are you using them to create intrigue or curiosity of like, oh, you know, Mark is talking to this person who worked at YouTube. How are you packaging that up in that there's a question or some intrigue that someone says, I want to know what happens in that conversation, so I want to click on that video. If you gave away the whole thing, if you said, here's the three tips that we've talked about, or here's how to launch a channel, and you gave away everything in the title and thumbnail, there would be no reason for someone to click on it. So how do you tease or create enough curiosity or intrigue to get someone to click on the video? You know, the person who probably most people would say does this best in the world is Mr. Beast. And you look at his thumbnails, there's almost never any text on them. They're bright, they're visual, they tell a story. You know, he has these videos where like he has a rock tied to his, you know, tied to him, and he's sinking like to the bottom of the ocean. You're like, oh my goodness, did that really happen? I'm intrigued. Now I have to click on the video to actually see what happened. So thinking about storytelling and creating intrigue and curiosity through that visual component and the text or title component. So that's the first thing that is really important that a lot of creators do it well. It's not easy to do well. It's easier said than done.
Sure.
And also there's a ton of creators and specifically brands. Most brands, I would say, on YouTube operate very poorly. And the number one reason is because they put almost no effort into their title and thumbnail.
Yeah, makes sense. And I also like the idea of just, I mean, the show is all about curiosity and asking better questions and so forth. So I love the curiosity part. And the other part that I want to ask you about that I'm intrigued about is just, especially with hooks and the episode titles, like some of my favorite podcasts, I've seen them go down the very much the fear-based kind of clickbaity style headlines. And, you know, they're still actually my favorite podcast, but I'm like, gosh, like, is that really what it takes And I guess maybe I'll ask you that question. Like, can it just be purely like, I want to know more about that versus like scaring us into fear and so forth, right? Like, because it would feel so misaligned for me to like, you know, I don't even know, like I come up with a title that would feel like, if you don't listen to this, you're gonna fail on YouTube or something like that. Like, it just doesn't feel right, but I know it works.
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of opportunity for positive framing, and so I'm just looking. I'm actually looking right now at Diary of a CEO.
This is what I was thinking. the one I was thinking of.
You know, it's one of the top podcasts in the world, and I would say it's one of the top podcasts on YouTube. And when I look at some of these, there was actually a conversation that was fantastic from a couple of months ago. It is Passive Income Expert, How to Make 10K per Month in 90 Days. So that's a positive framing episode. And but so it's here, it's he has basically said, this is a passive income expert. So this is that person's tagline or their credibility. And here's how to do something. And so right there, you know, that's, and this video has 3.3 million views. It's one of his top performing over the last couple of months.
Yeah.
There is, I think, a combination of there's credibility there. There's a passive income expert, or there is at least a suggestion of credibility. And there is a suggestion of here's something you're going to learn, but it's in the positive framing. So I think if you use that of credibility plus suggestion of learning and you put that in a positive framing, I think that can work very well on YouTube.
Okay.
And I would
going
say
back,
that
yeah, go ahead.
The other piece, you know, so if there's kind of the two main pieces, there's the packaging and the click-through rate. And then there is once someone gets to watching a video, oftentimes there's this people will talk about the YouTube algorithm as a black box and it's so complex and it's, you know, so hard to understand. I would argue it's pretty simple at its core. Essentially, it comes down to when I click on a video, YouTube wants to know, did that person have a positive watch experience? Because, you know, all of the platforms want the people there to stay on the platform for longer and they want to understand what is performing well and what's not performing well. Which YouTube's primary signal for that is what they call average view duration, AVD. And so if I click on one of your videos, Mark, and after 5 or 10 seconds, I say, you know, this is starting off a little more slowly than I would like, or this didn't meet my expectations and I leave, YouTube will interpret it as that individual had a unsatisfactory watch experience and they will essentially downrank that video in search and discovery. If that person instead says, this is really engaging and they watch the majority of the video, YouTube interprets it as that person really liked the video, which means it must be a high quality video, which means we want to send it to more people. So that's really what it comes down to. You're looking at click-through rate and average view duration. And, you know, at its core, like those are that's the 80-20 right there. So if you have a solid value proposition, you know who your target audience is, and you have good packaging and you have quality video content, I tell people YouTube is mostly like the gym. Once you know it works, it's just rep sets and consistency, and you do it consistently over time and you will grow.
I love it. I think simplicity just works and also allows us to feel like we're making progress and see the progress. That's something I want to talk a little bit about at the end or on the mental fitness side is just like, okay, how do we keep our mind motivated and check as we're going through, let's like probably the experimentation phase of I know some of the frameworks that you use. I do find it interesting, like this, as you were talking about just the positive outcome score or metric. I mean, it's not much different than other mediums as well. I remember when I was writing my first book, James Clear gave me some really good advice. He's like, you've got to really front load the first few chapters. Like it's got to be your best stuff. And I'm like, that's interesting. Is like, if you even think of people that pick up a book in a bookstore, or I guess now even with samples, you got to hook them in. That's essentially what you're saying here with videos. Yes. Is there like a, is it, because all videos are certain you know, different lengths and so forth, but is there, and it doesn't have to be YouTube's like algorithms, but is there a percentage, like the first 20% kind of thing, like really focused there? Or is there like a psychology behind that at all?
Yeah. So what you're seeing on the platform today, and of course the platform, you know, changes over time.
Yeah, of course.
Today, when people click on a video, typically their mindset is in the first, I would say, 30 seconds to a minute, they are very much evaluating, is this video worth my time? Because many videos on YouTube, and I would actually say most top creators are moving towards longer content. So most videos that I see, you know, they are probably in the 20 to 40 minute range. That's a lot. That's a good chunk of our time. And so people are they're in evaluation mode for that first minute. And so what you will see in almost all videos is there is kind of like a trailer or a hook in the beginning, because if you look at every video, it has a retention curve. So you can see in YouTube Studio what percentage of people are leaving at literally every second mark. Mm. And typically retention curves have very steep drop-offs in the first 30 seconds or a minute. So most creators are probably losing 50% or over 50% of the people that click on the videos in the first 30 seconds. And so you have to be very mindful that even though you've gotten someone to click on a video, they're still evaluating, is this worth my time or not? And, you know, you need to your point, front load. There is a retention formula on YouTube, and very much the first 30 seconds or 60 seconds is what's the trailer, what's the hook, what's the most engaging parts that are going to happen in the rest of the video that you can tease to people so that they say, okay, this is worth my time to listen to, you know, in some cases, or to watch a 30-minute video, or in some cases, to watch a 2 or 4 hour podcast conversation.
Yeah.
People are very bored with what you're doing on YouTube.
And like, I think if we pause and just think of ourselves as a viewer of anything, I mean, you can probably recognize what you're saying just in ourselves, right? Like we've all been on the other side of that. I'm like, okay, that's not really for me, and you click out kind of thing, right? So it makes sense. So I guess my biggest question, so I've been challenged a bit over the years on this, but I feel like, at least in the speaking world, it's finally starting to land. Like, I spent a lot of time trying to build up this brand around mental fitness when everyone was speaking about mental health. And I know you can relate to this, when you say the words mental health, there's an emotion to it. You know, it's usually like pulling myself out of a hole, and I've been there with you as well. Like, I totally get that. And I've always just thought of mental fitness as kind of like an umbrella term that includes mental health, but also includes mental optimization and performance and resilience and all that kind of stuff. And it just feels a little bit more like physical fitness, where it's a little bit more empowering, like, okay, so I can do something about this. So that's what this show has always been about. It doesn't matter whether it's you or business professionals or creatives or, you know, culture shifters like the Tony Hawks of the world. It all comes down to, like, what are you doing to keep your mind in check as you're building or as you're doing your thing and so forth? And what questions can we be asking? What practices work and so forth? But that still feels really like big, you know? Like, so I was thinking when you were talking about like figuring out exactly like what do you do that's really unique. I mean, I think it's a bit of a combination for me. It's the topic itself is still, I'm biased, of course, because I'm around it, but I mean, I think it's still a little bit, it's still new, or it's growing and so forth. And then my whole thing is kind of combining a lot of your sweet spot stuff around the simplicity of it. It's like, sure, you can go to 7-day silent retreat and those are fantastic, but like, how do you win the seconds of the day when like an email throws you off or something happens and so forth? And like, let's get those practical tips. So I guess, what would you do? Like, if you were sitting on this side of the mic and you're like, okay, I'm going to launch this show on YouTube. Like, I guess, where would you even start with that topic?
Yeah, I would start by going a little bit back to the content market fit exercise. And, you know, I think you have, Mark, such a strong point of view on your value proposition and what you stand for and what you want to talk about. I think the thing that would be important would be to look at what is the competitive space doing right now, because this is a very popular, you know, health and longevity and fitness is becoming one of the biggest verticals on YouTube. So it's a very competitive space. Yeah. You know, and even big podcasts like the Huberman podcast, Diary of a CEO, Modern Wisdom, they have a health optimization, you know, mental fitness skew to them. And so I think it's having a good sense of what's your point of view, where do other people stand, and what is the opportunity in terms of, like, is there white space around talking about this topic in a certain way that isn't being covered? Or sure. Is there an audience out there that needs this type of message and is on YouTube and doesn't currently have it? One way that's been described to me of launching a channel on YouTube, there's kind of four ways to go about it. You can be the first to do it, which is hard. You know, very few of us are the first.
Sure.
You can be better than other folks. So if you have just higher quality content, information, guests, that's a way to differentiate. You can be different than others. So if you have mental fitness as your kind of core topic, is there a way you can add another layer to that? So it's mental fitness for X, or it's mental fitness as a parent. You know, this is the idea of niching down. You are this plus something else no one else can do it. And I have examples of, or stories of people that I've worked with where we've done this exercise if it's helpful. Or the last one is taking, you know, that topic and serving it to people that have never heard it before. So it's like, you can be first, you can be better, you can be differentiated, or you can find audiences that have never seen this. So that's how I would think about putting this up on YouTube, is kind of going through that exercise and figuring out how you are adjacent to some of the things that are happening. Because if, you know, if you're going to be going head to head with Huberman or and they're at 8 million or 14 million subscribers, it's going to be a hard battle.
Totally. And my take on that too is just, I don't necessarily, and maybe this is the wrong perspective, but I don't actually necessarily want to go, even if I had the resources to go head to head with those shows. Like, I see the data out there around that anywhere from 60 to 80% of the population says that they show up at work stressed daily. I mean, there are a lot of people struggling. So I feel like if anything, we need to band together, all of us in this space in some capacity. And yeah, of course, you know, Chris from Modern Wisdom has a certain take. And like, I all of those shows that you mentioned, I follow, and also tune in based on kind of where, like, do I want to like a Huberman style this morning, or would I prefer, you know, Stephen Bartlett kind of thing? So I guess it's just trying to find, I guess I need to really think about like that persona or unique. Yeah. Edge.
And I'll give you an example. So I worked with a creator. She was a personal friend, and she came to me and she said, David, I want to be a tennis creator. Her name is Yo-Yo. I said, Yo-Yo, there are a million tennis creators out there, like, and you're not even that good at tennis. You know, it's going to be a hard interview. I said, let's niche down. You are a tennis creator plus what? She said, okay, I want to be tennis plus fashion. And I said, that's good. That's a better start. But there's still too many tennis fashion creators out there. And so where we got to was, Yo-Yo has an incredible story. So she has she had twin boys that were born a couple months before my daughter. And she used tennis to get back into shape postpartum. And so now she has a channel that is tennis plus fashion plus, you know, family content, you know, her being a mother. Yo-Yo is the only person in the world that has that story. So that's what I talk about. How do you add on other things to what you're already doing? So mental fitness plus, I know you're a parent. I know you have, you know, you've written books in this space. What are the other things that you can add on that, you know, then when you take a step back, you are the only person in the world that is doing this plus this plus this.
Yeah. Okay. That's super helpful. I mean, well, to be continued, because those are the next questions when we stop hitting record. What does it look like to work with David? Okay, so say, let's just hypothetically say we've figured that out. Then this is a show that for 8 years now, there's been an episode that releases every Sunday. I mean, I do a couple clips primarily right now on Instagram, and then a kind of a core post with, you know, your image and the title of the show. And that's just what I've been doing in terms of, you know, just really doing not much, to be completely frank, just having some sort of presence. If you land on that page, you can see all the guests. So for YouTube, then, with the consistency of what I just shared for per episode, I guess what should I be aiming for? And this is where, in our first conversation, I was, you know, somewhat, you know, kind of pleasantly surprised that, as much as I love Gary Vee and the whole crew, like, I don't have to try to aim for, you know, 55 videos a week. Yeah. And, like, make it somewhat manageable, right? Or at least to start. But, like, I guess what's the minimum or the right approach to get started?
Yeah. Consistency is key. Consistency is the most important thing. I would argue a great starting point is just once a week. And I think podcasts are fantastic formats to put up on YouTube, because you can get a lot of, you know, juice out of the squeeze. Essentially, you can get three different types of content out of a single episode. So what you'll see a lot of podcasts do on YouTube is they upload the long form, the full episode, on their channel. So maybe this is an hour long episode.
Yep.
They will typically take one or two segments from that episode, and they will upload that also as long form videos on YouTube. So let's say there's a specific segment where we're talking about, you know, the content market fit exercise. That could be packaged up as, here is a starting point exercise for a YouTube channel, and that's 10 or 15 minutes. And what you'll typically find is those segment clips get more views than the long form episode.
Sure.
And then you can take a couple of shorter form clips, so let's say 30 seconds to a minute, and upload them as YouTube Shorts. So you basically have coverage across both long form YouTube and YouTube Shorts, and you are getting three different types of content from a single episode. And I think if you can do that consistently, that's a great starting point and a great way for a YouTube channel to grow. And also, as I remind people, YouTube Shorts these days is top of funnel discoverability for your channel. And so it's really important, if you want to grow, to have coverage across that surface. So if you're putting up some YouTube Shorts, you're reaching more people. A portion of those people, if it's good content and they like what you're putting out there, will come back to the main channel. They'll watch some videos. A portion of those people become subscribers. So this is just a funnel, and it's used synergistically, shorts and long form. In podcasts, you can create all of that content from a single episode.
So then a weekly episode, essentially, at least the guardrails that I can follow, is aim for 4 to 5 pieces of content. For the, well, it doesn't have to all be published in the same week, obviously. You core upload the whole episode, obviously, and make sure there's a good trailer in the front and everything we've already talked about, the title and the thumbnail and so forth. A couple clips, longer form clips from that episode, and then a couple shorts, and kind of like drip those out over the course of a couple weeks.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, to simplify it even more, if you have one episode, let's create three pieces of content from that. You have the full episode on the channel. You have one segment that is 10 to 15 minutes. And then you have one short. And then I think you can post those all in a single week. Or, you know, you could put them across a two-week period. And then, the thing to be mindful of specifically for the full episode and the 10 or 15-minute clip is having a very well-designed thumbnail and title. So there is, you know, it's not just, this is episode 2000 of Behind the Human. I know you've been doing this for a while, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the 2000. It is, what is the nugget or the intriguing conversation or thing that the guests mentioned that will kind of draw people in and get them to click on the video and then watch the rest of the video. So being mindful mindful and strategic about what your title and thumbnail are for the full episode and the 10 or 15 minute clip that you're posting as well.
So you make sure that, I mean, each piece of content kind of stands on its own. Is that what I'm kind of getting? And then maybe in the comments that if you're in the clip, you know, for the full episode, you know, here's the link kind of thing.
That's a great point. So yes, every piece of content on YouTube should be a standalone piece of content. It should be entertaining and valuable on its own. I know on other platforms, you know, people use certain posts on Instagram or other surfaces to basically be promotional pieces of content for other things that are happening. Typically, the behavior I've seen on YouTube and all of the work that I've done is there isn't really, outside of, there are YouTube posts. So you can make a static post on YouTube. I'd say that's the only place, Mark, where you have permission to use it as a promotional lever. The other, you know, shorts and long form and live on YouTube need to be thought of as standalone content that are not promoting or driving to other things.
Okay, got you. And then just like on the psychology, from the psychology standpoint or mental fitness part of it, I mean, I know, of course, this will vary, and you know, you can't predict whether, you know, people are following all the advice on the title and thumbnails and all that kind of stuff. But like in general, what kind of I'm about to do this, so like this episode will be on the platform. And frankly, what I wanted to say is, will you come back in 6 months, hold me accountable? We can do a little bit of an update, and I can hopefully show you some progress. So that's my accountability plug over here. So, but what should I aim for from a timing perspective? If let's say I did the 3, you know, posts per week and was consistent and just kept, you know, obviously getting better and better as you go, and hopefully, you know, I actually work together directly. Like, am I looking at like, where can, I think we need some signals of progress as humans. Like that's where we feel like, okay, I'm seeing something move here. But there's periods where that doesn't happen and you just kind of have to keep going. And then we need a little mental nutrition to fill in the gap, right?
Yeah, I would say, so it's nice, YouTube, in terms of, you know, tracking or signals of progress, you know, the milestone that most people are looking for when they start YouTube is to be accepted into the YouTube Partner Program. So that means being able to monetize or make money off of your channel. Yeah. And so there are clear criteria for that. And you have a tracking bar so you can literally see the progress you're making in terms of subscribers and watch hours on the platform. You know, in terms of thinking about the progression, I would look at, are you seeing an uptick over time in average view count on your videos? You know, which again, is going to be the output metric. Over time, you want to see your click-through rate going up. You know, there's no, people ask YouTube all the time, is there kind of a benchmark for these things? YouTube's going to say no. It's very dependent on vertical and channel and styles. I mean, I think if you're looking at ballpark, click-through rate should be 5 to 10%.
Okay.
Average view duration, typically what I've seen is if you're finding your audience and you have quality content that is formatted kind of in the way that people expect on YouTube, you know, you could probably expect most people to watch somewhere between 25 to 50% of your video. So maybe average view duration, if you're doing hour-long videos, of 10 to 20-ish minutes, and then you're going to have people watching the whole thing. That will be the minority of people. But yeah, I would look at those metrics over time. And again, there are so many analytics within YouTube Studio. Don't get overwhelmed. Really think about click-through rate and average view duration as kind of the main signals. And each video, do a quick post-mortem, like, is this click-through rate and average view duration above what I've been seeing, below what I've been seeing, and what do I think, what are the themes and patterns that might be contributing to that overperformance or underperformance?
I love about what you shared too is that, because usually, I mean, so many people, and myself included, like you immediately go to views on like validation in anything that we're putting out there. And even though I think a lot of us know as well that that's not the end all be all, like what you're suggesting here, I mean, of course, I think all of this comes with increase in viewership and subscribers and stuff like that. But it doesn't, even if there's 10 people, if you're focusing on making sure those 10 people are watching 50% plus of your video, like that just by default should grow. Right.
Yes.
And like that feels tangible. Like, okay, I'm going to focus on these couple metrics, do everything I can, obviously drive people over here. But like, if they're going to drive here, it's almost like it's building the foundation, right, before putting on the addition.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking to build community. And so even if it is a small community, if that community is getting value and they are retaining and they are continuing to watch episodes week over week. And I think, again, there's things that you can do to facilitate that community building, you know, engaging with comments, talking to people. Like, these are, you know, sometimes we forget, we get kind of numb to the numbers. We see thousands or millions of views, and it's like, these are each individuals.
Yeah, they're humans for the most part.
Yeah, people. And so building community, I mean, I think that's the beauty of YouTube, is like, YouTube is a place for really community building, which is why I think it's sustained over time. It's, you know, YouTube is 21 years old. I think it's a great point, Mark, not getting discouraged if it is a small community, thinking about the depth and the kind of strength of that community, not necessarily the breadth of viewership.
Well, and I think you mentioned on our last call too, that really stuck with me around just, you know, and not to get hung up on numbers, but I mean, I think everyone, like, you know, if we're trying to create these businesses, it's interesting to know this, but you making the point of, you've seen a lot of creators that are not in the millions and they're, you know, 50,000 people following them and they're generating $500,000 a year in certain cases. Like, it's possible, I guess you can say, right?
Yes.
There's levels for everyone.
100%. And, you know, and YouTube has 10 monetization products that are all revenue sharing. And so the name of the game for a creator is figuring out which are the revenue streams that you're going to, are going to work for your business. And then acknowledging that no one revenue, you're not going to build a business off of one revenue stream. You're going to kind of piece together a full puzzle, or kind of a, you know, I don't know what the analogy is here, but you're going to piece together your business through a variety of revenue streams, which includes brand deals. I mean, this is a big one for a lot of creators in this space. You know, and YouTube is fundamentally different than TikTok and Instagram, in that those platforms typically just have creator funds that are static pots of money. And so as Instagram and TikTok make more money, they don't pay out more money to creators on the platform. And the stat that YouTube shares a lot is they've paid $100 billion to channels on the platform in the past 4 years. And so, you know, YouTube would argue they are, you know, the first and world's largest creator economy. And the whole point of the YouTube Partner Program was to build a partnership where, as creators build businesses, they are sharing in the success and the revenue with the platform.
I'm excited. Gosh, we're at time. Do you have to run right away, or wrap?
I can go another five minutes.
Okay. I'm gonna start wrapping. I do have one more question for you, but I was just gonna say, I feel excited. And it doesn't feel like, there's work, of course, like anything. But it doesn't feel overwhelming anymore, because it did at one point.
And I would say, and like, I mean, I, people think it's funny when I say this, that YouTube is like the gym, but it's like, if you know what works in the gym, if you want to build bigger biceps or you want to improve your VO2 max, you're not constantly searching for something different and doing a different workout every day. You know what the game plan is, and then you need to show up to the gym, you know, every week. And so on YouTube, it's like, it's the same formula. It's like, we know what works. We don't need to go back to the drawing board every time. We don't need to try to find the new shiny object. It's just a matter of showing up and being consistent and, you know, incrementally improving your, you know, the packaging, the retention, the community building over a period of time.
Last question for you. I mean, it hasn't been that long since you haven't been directly at YouTube. So I'm just curious, whatever you can share. But the question that I'm curious to hear the answer to is, you know, over the next maybe 5 to 10 years, like where's YouTube really betting big on? Like, where are they really? I mean, we see what happens present day, but all, you know, any organization like usually has a pretty, you know, a North Star there.
Yeah. What the short answer I would say is the living room or TVs. So YouTube is the number one streaming platform on TVs. Most watch time is happening on connected TVs. And a lot of what you're seeing with top creators is that they are viewing their YouTube channel as a TV network. And because of that, they have a variety of, you know, TV shows or repeatable formats on their channel to program out their content slate. So, you know, Behind the Human, the Mr. Beast, the Mark Rober channels, these are TV networks. And just like ESPN is a TV network, they don't just have SportsCenter. They have a variety of TV shows.
Yeah.
They all have a variety of, you know, formats or shows on the channel. So I think there used to be this idea of, if I have different formats, I need to create separate channels. I would argue we're very much in a world where you put everything on a single channel and people expect to have a variety of formats. I think YouTube is going to continue to make a push and try to dominate on TV screens. And as people, you know, sit back and queue up their TV, like, that's what creators should be thinking about. How are you making content as someone is looking at their TV screen, kind of like they do with Netflix or other streaming platforms, and creating content for that surface.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate this conversation and everyone listening, and then hopefully everyone watching now as well. Stay tuned. We've got some big evolutions in store. And David, I guess the last one, like, how do people work with you? Where do we get in touch?
Yeah, I'm around. My company is Structure Creation Consulting. As I told you, Mark, I'm a structure creator. This is what I love doing. So, I go to a lot of these events. You can go to our website, structurecreation.com. I'm excited to continue partnering with a lot of fantastic people in this space. And I'm happy to be your YouTube personal trainer, Mark. I'll check back in 6 months and, you know, see all of the progress that you've had and hold you accountable if you want. So
yes, thank you.
This is fun for me to be, you know, in this space. And as I tell people, like, I'm not, you know, my contribution to the health and fitness space, I'm not a researcher, I'm not an academic, I don't have a medical background. Like, I have a communication structure marketing background. This is how I want to help people in this space. And so much of even what you see today is, you know, health and fitness are becoming more of the conversation. And so it's a messaging exercise. How do you talk about these topics in ways that connect with people? Because we know longevity and biohacking and some of these terms that feel inaccessible are not going to connect with the majority of people.
Yeah. I think it's fundamental. It goes right back to, like, beginning of time. I mean, people would share what's going on through conversation and storytelling and so forth. So, like, you could have the best longevity product, or we could have the best podcast talking about health and mental fitness, but if no one knows about it, doesn't, you know, just, not that it doesn't matter, but it just doesn't have the impact and the influence it can. And that's why I love that you're working in this space, because, of course, I'm biased being in it myself. There's still a lot of work to be done, and we all win. That's the thing. There's no downside to us being healthy, feeling great, thinking well. I mean, that's where the next innovations come from. That's when you can support you and your family. Like, it's just, there's no downside there. So I thank you. Thank you for what you've done over here, but then just thank you for your higher mission of helping as many of these people as possible.
Of course, health is wealth, Mark.
And yes, well said.
And I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.